Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Ian Pickus. Author and Rolling Stone contributing editor Rob Sheffield spends a lot of time listening to music, and he's one of those fans who can recall Britney Fox and Twisted Sister B-sides with the same enthusiasm other people have for the Beatles. Actually, he loves them too. But aside from some mean tambourining at a rock and roll fantasy camp, Sheffield, who's familiar to VH1 viewers, has never been very musically inclined. When many of his peers were trying to make it in underground indie bands, he was the guy at the bar scribbling notes, which perhaps is why he has such a passion for karaoke, a perfect setting for a clash of irony and sincerity, musical greatness and amateurism. Karaoke forms the borders of Sheffield's new memoir, Turn Around, Bright Eyes, The Rituals of Love in Karaoke, which is published by HarperCollins imprint It Books. But it's about much more than that. Love, loss, family relationships, the cosmos. Rob Sheffield, welcome to the Roundtable.
Hey, how you doing? Thanks.
Did I make you laugh with the tambourining thing?
Yes.
Tell us what kind of musician you are, because I think it's important to know that going into the karaoke aspect of your life.
Yeah, well, I'm somebody who has always loved music all my life and always loved talking about it, writing about it, arguing about it in bars. And I've always tried to bluff my way into situations where I try to let my friends who are actual musicians kind of let me sit in. And it always ends in a disastrously ugly way. I do not have the musical ability, and I'm always trying. I'm always thinking, this is the year I'm going to, you know, learn guitar chords or, you know, learn to pick or something like that. I still have a guitar next to my desk that I've been hoping to learn to play for years.
Is that why you went into music criticism? I mean, was it the proximity to a world that you knew you couldn't quite inhabit?
Well, it was more like this was writing about music is my way of participating in music and sharing music and worshiping music. And it's funny that it for me, I guess I assume that there's naturally going to be some carryover where I'm going to get a little better at performing music. And it's funny how that never seems to happen. There was one day when I was 20 when I actually was able to remember three guitar chords at the same time. And it took me like a long time to change from one chord to the next. But I was so excited. I made a tape of myself playing Wild Thing because I knew that this would never happen again. So I have a cassette of me playing Wild Thing for 20 minutes. And it's one of a kind.
You know, you really only need three chords. I mean,
it was hard to even remember those. I thought I'm going to forget these by evening. And I did indeed.
So tell us about entering the world of karaoke. Do you remember when you first did it?
Yeah, the first time I did karaoke was about 10 years ago, and I was in a bar in New York, and it was one of those standard karaoke initiation things where you're out to dinner with a couple friends, and they say, "Oh, let's go to karaoke," and I thought, "Yeah, this will be fun. I'll come along, and I'll clap, and I'll applaud, and I'll be part of the experience." And there's still no way you're getting me up there. And of course, it didn't take that long to get me up there. It was a beautiful thing to actually participate in.
The one question I had, you know, throughout the book was your vocation is to kind of be a cultural arbiter of music. You write for Rolling Stone, which is still a highly read and respected tastemaker, and your pithy reviews of albums are certainly important to read. So I was wondering if you, like, truly hate an artist or you haven't found anything redeeming in a song, but it comes on at karaoke, if you have new ears or if you kind of separate what you might have, you know, written or thought about a group or a song at some point when it's in a different setting like a karaoke bar.
Yeah, totally. Sometimes you can hear a song at karaoke that you've always disliked and you can get a new perspective on it. And sometimes you're like, hey, this is a great song. I was doing a karaoke with a bunch of friends of mine who are in their early 20s and they like all this pop punk from the late 90s and 2000s that, you know, just missed my radar at the time because, you know, I wasn't a child. And it was so funny that I kept going, wow, this song is great. What is it? And they'd be like, dude, this is a Wheatus song or this is a Blink-182 song. And it was funny for me that, you know, that I was all like, oh, wow, American Hi-Fi are awesome. Like, it's funny that you can always hear music in a karaoke context with a bunch of your drunk friends singing along, and it can be a whole new way of hearing the song.
It also led to the bonding that brought you much closer with the woman who would eventually become your second wife. And we should say you've written previous memoir about your first wife basically died suddenly and left you grieving for a long time. And then this book is more an exciting look at the way that you came together with someone new and special at the karaoke bar. So how did that all happen? I mean, how did you kind of bond over this karaoke existence?
Well, when karaoke entered my life, it was kind of a low point in my life. I'd just been widowed, and I was in a new town and living alone and very solitary. And one of the things that I liked about karaoke was it kind of forced me out of my shell. It gave me a reason to leave the apartment and go out and stand up in front of people and make noise and make a fool out of myself. And it turns out that that was just what I needed. So it was a real part of coming back to life for me.
I loved reading about how you try to break the ice with musicians you're interviewing by asking them what their karaoke song is. So I've read what many of your karaoke songs are in this book, but if you had to pick one, and if I were, you know, Rob Sheffielding you at the start of an interview, what would you say?
Wow, you know, if I had to do karaoke right now, it would be Hot Legs by Rod Stewart, just because that's a song that is just anthemic and yet, you know, self-mocking and yet really sordid yet humorous. It's got everything that you want in a sort of karaoke jam. Rod Stewart is kind of my spirit animal. I idolize him. I kind of feel like singing his songs at karaoke are kind of like my version of kneeling at the feet of a Zen master and asking him why.
You write a lot about Rod Stewart. Was he kind of, you know, late era Rod Stewart made for karaoke?
Totally. Rod Stewart is a perfect karaoke master because he writes these songs that are universally identifiable and songs that are really famous, but yet also songs that are really weird. And that could only be him. And it's funny that he only writes, you know, very sporadically. Songwriting itself is not something that necessarily flames him. And yet when he does it, you know, you could totally tell his voice.
The question that always comes up with music, here we are in 2013, is, you know, we don't have kind of the chart-topping, you know, hit song that everyone knows that stays up on the charts for 16 weeks, or, you know, a TRL in the afternoon that's defining tastes in the same way we did 5, 10, 15 years ago. And certainly, you know, things will catch on YouTube and go viral and so on. But I wonder if you think the amount of kind of common ground that could populate a karaoke book is tailing off now in the way that we are able to personalize Pandora stations and so on.
Yeah, there's definitely an element of that. There's definitely an element of the idea of new pop music is less urgent to people because people have more access to music from all over the historical spectrum than they ever have. So people are no longer limited as much to what's new. And that's something that's, you know, exciting for me as a music fan to see that, you know, for people like my nephews who are tween boys, you know, they're listening to Led Zeppelin and Pink Floyd and Queen and the Beatles, and they don't think of this stuff as old and they don't think of it as new. That's just not a category of how they listen to music. They just think of it as cool. And it's funny that everything from the past is so accessible to them that, you know, music that's from right now is just another category.
How often are you doing karaoke now?
I guess a few times a week, whenever I can. It's a beautiful thing. The thing is, karaoke allows anybody to participate in music, even those of us with no skill whatsoever. And it just allows people to share music, which is a fundamental human need. And it's funny that the technology changes, but that fundamental human need to share music, that's just something that's elemental. And it's funny that that takes different forms as the technology takes different forms. So, you know, like I've written books about mixtapes and MTV and things like that are like karaoke, just technological mutations of the same basic time-honored human need to share music with other people.
Did you ever get a home karaoke machine?
No, I've never done the home karaoke machine thing. It's a different world.
Well, that's Rob Sheffield, and he's the author of Turnaround Bright Eyes. The Rituals of Love and Karaoke. The book is out now from It Books. And Rob, it's been a pleasure to speak with you. We'll be reading you in Rolling Stone and elsewhere. And thanks for your time.
Thanks so much. Great to talk to you. Thanks for having me.
And you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.